Welcome to the Exodus Cry podcast, where we have honest conversations around exploitation, trafficking, sexual culture, and justice.
Today, we have writer, activist, podcaster, and frequent guest on the Joe Rogan Show joining us, Megan Murphy. Megan is the founder and editor of Feminist Current. Let's jump into the episode.
It's always great to talk with you, Megan. Like, I just always enjoy and get so much out of our conversations. I feel that for me, it's rare to meet somebody who's so deeply invested in so many of the issues that I personally care about. And I've said this to you before, it's been amazing to watch your journey and your trajectory over the years. And the things that you bring light to, the controversial nature of the things that you're courageously willing to engage conversation around. And we both faced a lot of backlash for some of our views and those things that we don't treat as sacred cows and say, let's talk about this. One of those things is pornography. And I've obviously recently written a book, did several documentaries, campaigns around the issue of pornography. And I'd really just love to, you know, just to kind of pick up that conversation with you, and especially for our audience that isn't as familiar with you, just to hear some of your perspectives on this issue. You've written articles posing questions that most people would never dare around, you know, the subject of porn. So I've really observed in you a willingness to just, in sort of a curious way, just explore the whole thing of like, what do we do about this issue of pornography in which so many people are, you know, being exploited and taken advantage of? And so, so I'm curious, recently, if there's anything that's been coming up for you related to this issue. A number of months back, you were writing some articles and had been engaging the conversation more aggressively. What's the latest in your world pertaining to that subject?
Well, I mean, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And I've learned so much from your work. Your work is incredible. The documentaries you've made, I think, are such an amazing gift to the world. And your book as well. And as you know, I don't need to tell you this, but there are so few people who are really pushing back against porn and the porn industry. And I think that was one of the things that surprised me the most when I started to do this work. So, you know, I started out just doing feminist radio, like at a little co-op radio station in Vancouver, and blogging. And I started writing about and covering pornography and the sex industry very early on because I was really inherently disturbed by it. And the amount of pushback, the kind of pushback that I got, who I was getting pushback from, was shocking. And I didn't understand because I was a leftist. Then, you know, I was a socialist and a feminist for my entire life. I don't, you know, necessarily identify in those ways anymore. But I thought, you know, of all people, surely the feminists would be against pornography. Surely the left would understand what a corrupt, repulsive, exploitative, racist, misogynist industry this is. And yet these were the people who were attacking me, you know, the mainstream feminists, the third wave feminists, the young feminists, the feminists who are my age, and the left, you know, the socialists. And it didn't stop me, of course. Like, nothing seems to be able to, for better or for worse. But you know, that was It's amazing the power that industry has over individuals, over movements, over the media. And one of the things that I have been noticing lately, and that I've been, you know, I've been happy about, is that I've noticed that men have started to push back.
Mm.
Right? Like, the men who are sort of in that mental health, wellness, physical health sphere have started to push back and say, you know, I don't think porn is good for men, you know, and it's not, you know, they're not pushing back necessarily in the exact ways that I have. And maybe they're not getting the full breadth of the industry, but they're starting to see, which I think makes a lot of sense because we're now at a point where men have grown up with pornography. So anyone who is younger than us will have grown up with, I didn't grow up with the internet, but you know, all the younger generations now have, the millennials, Gen Z, they've grown up with the internet, they've grown up with porn, not just easily accessible, but pushed on them. It's completely unavoidable. You know, boys, of course, if you're on the internet, if you're on Instagram, you're going to be getting porn in your DMs. It's going to be in your feed. You can't not see it. And I think that men have started to realize, and young men too, you know, I have male friends who are in their 20s and I've talked to them about it. And I know men who've stopped watching porn on their own accord because they started to recognize how it was impacting their relationship with women, maybe their relationship, their intimate relationships, or, you know, how they saw women, how they treated women, their relationships to themselves, their mental health, their sexuality, what they were starting to become like attracted to and turned on by, and they were starting to feel disturbed by that. Because as you know, porn feeds you sort of more and more and more extreme, more graphic stuff. You're maybe watching something that you might consider rather vanilla, but these other videos are popping up saying, maybe you should watch this, you know, incest porn or violent porn, gang rape porn, whatever. And so that, I think, has been really inspiring to me. I mean, at the same time, the way that the internet is and the way that social media works has just made the industry that much more powerful and that much more disturbing. You know, I'm completely appalled and upset that pornography is allowed on Twitter and Instagram at all.
Right.
You know, like why do I have to see it?
Right.
When I'm not looking for it. Never mind kids.
Right.
So, you know, it's this massive, I think when I started writing about pornography and being like, this is clearly bad for women. This is clearly bad for men. These images are disturbing and they're hateful and they're violent and they're degrading. And what is anybody seeing in this? Why, you know, it's not that I don't know what porn looks like. I know people will say, oh, well, maybe you just haven't watched. And it's like, I watch. Not because I want to, but, you know, either because it's just there in front of me and I can't avoid it, or, you know, to see what's going on. And it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And I cannot understand why more people don't see that. It seems so obvious. It's so strange to engage in these arguments with people. It's like, does she look like she's enjoying herself? Like, is this what you think, you know, healthy masculinity looks like?
Right.
Healthy sexuality looks like?
Right. There are so many things that are obviously very wrong in the world of pornography. We wouldn't be having this conversation if pornography wasn't such a massive issue in our world. But to your point, it is the air we breathe in our culture today. You have to be very intentional, almost violent about keeping pornography out of your life if that's the path that you want to choose. And so there's this massive issue, and yet in the world of pornography, what we have discovered is how many instances of exploitation, manipulation, coercion, real actual rape, abuse, not just coming from one-off, you know, performers in Eastern Europe or some shady dark web site, but you have people like Stoya, one of the most prominent porn performers of all time, indicting a fellow performer, James Dean, one of the most prominent male performers of all time essentially saying he raped me and nothing's done about it. So here you have a situation where two of the most prominent people, the reason why I cite that example is to say that there's a problem in the pornography industry with exploitation and abuse and rape and coercion and all of that that goes on that seems so obvious to address. Like, if these kind of things were to come up in a workplace environment, like how quickly would something be done? And it would be like a story of like this thing. But to address the obvious that like these problems exist, these issues are going on, is to invoke this like almost irrational backlash in an ad hominem way. So it's like, I'm telling you that these, you know, videos exist on Pornhub and they need to be held accountable. Then the conversation becomes not about this, but about me. You're a horrible person, like, because you tweeted something 10 years ago, or like some angle to like discredit me or you or whoever, you know, for bringing up the argument in the first place. And it makes me, and this is coming from like these very prominent media outlets that are essentially shills for the porn industry. And the question I have is, why do you think that they're so defensive and sensitive about this issue of porn? Like, it, to me, it almost makes no sense. And is it like that with other issues, or is it something to do with our sexuality inherently, or what do you think it is that's invoking this? Like, because in my mind, it would make sense that name the outlet, you know, there's a bunch of them, would just be like, yeah, this is wrong. Let's get rid, instead of like, now you're turning this into a campaign about me. Like, I'm like a nobody. Like, what do you care who I like? It's like, let's discuss the issue at hand. So I'm just curious if you've thought about that.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that recently, like in terms of the way that I was attacked when I was writing about the sex industry, both, you know, critically about pornography and about prostitution. And, you know, I encountered cancel culture back in, you know, 2014, 2015, when a group of...
You're a veteran of cancel culture.
Yeah, like,
wow, one of
I've
the
been
early
canceled
veterans.
So many times.
Oh my gosh.
And like people, you know, when people talk about being canceled now over, you know, these various hot button issues, I'm like, oh, tell me about it. I mean, like, people think that I'm most famous for getting canceled over the, you know, gender identity, women's rights debate. But in 2015, there was this massive campaign in Canada to have me fired from my job. And it was started by sex industry advocates. It was started by these Canadian leftist groups and these organizations, these Canadian organizations who were advocating to legalize the sex trade and wanted me to shut up. And I was the only one writing about it in Canada, right? Like, I was definitely the only feminist, the only socialist writing against the porn industry, against the sex industry in Canada. I had been working at the time for this website called rabble.ca, which is like a Canadian leftist, you know, funded by labor unions website, and all these groups and funders and allies of this website started a massive campaign to have me fired. And I was the only one on the website who had anything negative to say about these industries. And it's like, why me? Like, who am I? I have no power. I have no money.
Yeah.
I have no, you know, like, I'm not, you know, totally. Like, what am I going to do about this massive billion-dollar industry?
Totally.
And you can't even handle just me saying this is unethical. This is misogynist. This is violent. This is hateful. Like, this
like,
is.
Why are like, you so threatened?
Like, this is trafficking's happening, rape's happening. Yeah. Like, what are exactly? Why are you so threatened? And so I think there's like a couple things. One of which is that I think when people are trying to shut you up, that should tell you that you're on the right track. And which isn't to say, you know, like all hateful speech is good speech, because of course people say awful things. But I think that if you have a good defense and you're living in a democracy and you're living in a place that supports free speech, when somebody says a bad thing or a stupid thing or a hateful thing, you should be able to say, you know, like, this is, I disagree because of this, or this is bad because of this, or this is dangerous, or this is hateful. But these like really, really intense efforts to silence and censor, I think should tell you something, right? Like, I think that it should tell you that you're on the right track. And the porn industry does that, as you know. They go after people in like so hard. They take their money and they take their power and they take their lawyers and they try to destroy you. And I know people that have been subjected to that in brutal ways. But I also think that with porn, you know, people take it as a personal attack. People now have grown up being told that they shouldn't feel any shame about what they do sexually, about their sexual desires, about their fetishes. And, you know, when you talk to men and women about pornography, and even in a barely critical way, they'll be really surprised. Often the people that I talk to about it, men and women alike, are really relieved when I say, you know, I was talking to a young woman recently, and she was talking about her partner who wouldn't have sex with her anymore but was using pornography every day. I'm sure you've heard these stories too. And I was like, you can say no. You know, like, I've told every partner that I've had, you know, once I discover, sometimes you don't know right away. Sometimes it takes a while into the relationship, and or maybe at first you think, you know, it's no big deal, or it's once in a while. And then maybe it starts to bother you partway through the relationship, or you realize how much they're using it, or you're realizing that it's having an impact. Whatever it is, you can say no whenever you want, and it's totally fine. And in fact, you should say no. You don't have to accept. Absolutely. Yeah, you don't have to accept somebody engaging in, you know, violent, you know, you're supporting this industry when you're watching. And you're supporting what's happening to those women and what those women are going through. And if you're a woman and you're having sex with a man, if you're in an intimate relationship with a man, you can tell when he's saying things to you or doing certain things to you that he learned from pornography, because it didn't come from you. And why would he think that you would like that or want that or enjoy hearing that? And saying no, it works. I mean, sometimes it doesn't work, and then you have to contend with, you know, what do you do? But women think that they have to put up with it. You know, most of my friends think that they have to put up with it, and they'll tell me, oh, you know, it's just a fantasy. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with you. And I'm like, of course it has something to do with you. It's not a sexual fantasy. It's not just a fantasy. Those are real people. He's engaging in that real sexual thing with that woman just because he's not the one touching her body, you know? And why are you gaslighting yourself into thinking it's okay when you obviously don't feel okay about it?
Right.
Like, it's horrible. And the men have been told that it's normal. So if they're confronted, if you say, I don't want you using porn, like, I'm not saying all these conversations have been easy for me to have with men. They certainly have not been. Yeah. But I have managed to get somewhere where they do get it and they're like, okay, I get it, I'll stop, I understand what you mean. But it's not just like, I don't like it. And they're like, oh, okay, sure. Especially when they've never heard that before and they feel personally attacked and they probably feel embarrassed and they probably do feel ashamed. And they should feel embarrassed and ashamed, frankly. But then, you know, you can deal with those emotions. Just because your natural response is to feel embarrassed and ashamed doesn't mean that you should necessarily shut down that conversation and not think about those feelings anymore. But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, there's so many things.
The concept of gaslighting yourself into agreeing to go along with it is such an interesting concept. I wanted you to tease that out in a second. But I just wanted to comment on one thing. There's a bunch of things, but I just want to briefly just comment on one thing, which is that I love what you're sharing from the perspective of just very like simple, down to earth, matter of fact truth relating to, you know, sometimes us intellectuals can get very like, very like big and theoretical and like our conceptual ideas around all this. It's just like, you don't know who's in those videos, you know, something as simple as that, because in my book and something that I advocate for when I work with men who are struggling with porn is this idea of building your fortress of truth. So the idea being that you have to practice disrupting and redirecting the energy of when you're feeling triggered to go to porn. People often mistake porn for being a moral and a spiritual struggle instead of a neurological struggle and a fantasy addiction. And therefore they are using means that ultimately aren't going to help them overcome the cycle of addiction and consumption and that they have. And so a lot of the work is about, first of all, framing the struggle and then using this practice of disrupting and redirecting. So the concept of disrupting is when you're feeling triggered by a fantasy. It's not true. So like working with men to build this fortress of truth, so when the trigger happens, you can actually speak the truth to it. So I love what you're saying from the standpoint of this, having this fortress, this war chest of truth to deploy against the fantasy. Like the truth is, I don't know who this person is. I don't know what their background is. I don't know how that, even if I think I do, I don't know how that specific scenario is, you know, that kind of thing. So first of all, I just want to thank you for sharing that, because I think it's really important that we be truthful and honest about this. It's like everyone's participating in this delusion. We're all pretending like the emperor's like wearing, you know, this fancy outfit when he's not, has no clothes on. It's like, why are we all participating in this delusion and pretending like there's not this massive elephant in the room, which is we have no idea how this video was made or who these people are. Like it's we're skirting so many things. The mental gymnastics that we have to play to participate in this, is it really worth the erection? I'm like, ah. So okay, that aside, I just want you to elaborate on this concept that just really struck me when you said it, of gaslighting yourself into agreeing to go along with. So okay, I have my thoughts on that, but I want you to elaborate on that, because I think that's a brilliant concept that people need to understand. I think a lot of, in particular, females probably fall into that category a lot.
Yeah, I think this does impact women in particular. I've also told men, you know, my criticisms of pornography and, you know, why I think it's bad for women and men as a whole, like why, you know, what you just said, which is you don't know what is happening to that woman in the video. You don't know how she got here. You don't know how old she is. You don't know how old she was when she got into this industry. You don't know what she's feeling right now while that's happening to her. And just saying that she got paid is not a good enough excuse. But just, you know, like, how does watching porn make you feel? Does this make you feel like a good man? Is this who you want to be as a person? And men are often relieved to hear that too. Because men who don't watch porn are shamed and mocked. It's not the other way around, you know? We're always told that we're being moralistic and we're shaming people and we're, you know, tutting people for just, you know, being sexually liberated. But in fact, our culture, it's gone, it's like done a 180, right? Where now men who don't use porn are like lying or they're pussies, mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. you know, there's all men watch porn, you know, and that's just men getting defensive about their own behavior, not wanting to think critically about what they're doing. But to answer your question, I mean, I think in general, women have been taught not to trust their gut instincts in a variety of ways. So women are told that they're crazy and, you know, they're hormonal and they're emotional. And so you can't trust your feelings because those things aren't real. So, and unfortunately, within third wave feminism, post-sexual liberation, we're in this porn culture. Even more so, women are told that if they feel uncomfortable with porn, or they don't like porn, or they don't like their partners using porn, that they're prudish and they're uptight and they should be good, giving, and game. You know, that little mantra that is horrible as far as I'm concerned, especially for women, because women, young women especially, already feel pressured to do things that they don't want to do sexually. And I think probably any woman who has been, you know, 18 or 19 or 20 will know, I know, I've been through all of this too, you know, that you feel like you're supposed to look a certain way, you're supposed to sound a certain way, you're supposed to be into certain things, you're supposed to be open-minded, you're supposed to try new things. And if your partner or a guy that you're with wants to try something, you should try it because, you know, maybe you'll like it. But also, if you don't do these things with him, then he'll leave you. You know, that's totally normalized in our culture, that a man who's not being sexually fulfilled in his marriage, you know, of course he cheated. Of course then he's going to use pornography. Of course he might leave her, as though like the fulfillment of certain sexual desires and fantasies and fetishes is the end all be all and it has to be fulfilled or else what? Like, are we all children? Everything we want has to be given to us?
Right.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and I think in order to watch porn and to be okay with porn, you do have to gaslight yourself and you have to lie to yourself. And that's, I think that's really damaging for your mental health and your sense of self and your sense of like self-worth and confidence. Like that's, you know, what it means to have integrity and to be an authentic person. And I think you have to have integrity and you have to be an authentic person if you're going to like yourself. And to be a whole, confident, self-assured person. And you can't be that, yeah. I think. If you're using pornography and you're watching a woman be choked, who's, you know, crying, who's being called every single disgusting, horrific name in the book, who's being hurt, who's maybe being raped, who's maybe been trafficked, and you're masturbating to that, and then you're telling yourself that that's fine and that's just a fantasy. You're just lying to yourself. You cannot live with integrity and be doing that. And I know that none of us are perfect. And I know that pretty much all men have watched porn or do use porn. And it's not my MO to go around actually shaming men who right. use pornography. Like I told you, I have one-on-one conversations with men about porn and the porn that they're using. And, you know, like, and they're my friends, and they're not all terrible people.
In just a few decades, porn has invaded the screens of nearly every household with an internet connection. But few people know the truth about the multi-billion dollar industry behind this content.
Action!
Our documentary miniseries, Beyond Fantasy, rips the mask off of the porn industry. It takes viewers straight into the belly of the beast and brings them face to face with some of the biggest porn producers and performers as they describe, in their own words, an industry that profits from ethical violation, coercion, and abuse.
The chances, the risks that they take are the deal that they make with the devil when they come into this business.
It's a hard-hitting series that exposes the porn industry like no other film. But keep in mind that it does include the use of blurred porn video clips, so we encourage viewer discretion. You can watch the Beyond Fantasy series for free on YouTube or at beyondfantasy.com.
I remember being in this leadership team meeting once, and the leader of this meeting told us, as a protocol, if you have something to interject in this meeting, go like this. Put your finger up like this. That way we're not all talking over each other. So just go like this. And to do this in this conversation is triggering to a lot of people. Coming back to kind of like where this conversation started is how sensitive and defensive these large institutions and outlets, media outlets and things, and the commercial sex industry itself is, are, whatever, about any criticism, any objective analysis. And really, like, what that tells me is that, you know, you are sort of like gifted this impression that you're about like good sex. Like that's what you kind of inherit in this space. And the truth is, you really don't. Because if you did, you would agree that this kind of stuff needs to be weeded out. Instead, you see it as a threat to your bottom line. So really, it's not the good sex that you care about, it's the money that you care about. And I actually asked this to a pornographer. I said to him, I said, you know, does the porn industry care more about their performers, or do they care more about money? Without even batting an eye, instantly, he said they care more about the money. And another prominent female performer, I pushed back against some of the genres that, you know, for example, depict women as little children and things. And she said, well, this is just a capitalist venture. So if it makes money, I'm just like, you all have tricked people. You have deceived the world into believing that you're the people that care about our sexual health. You don't give a lying bleep about our sexual health. You care about money. And so for us, like, just kind of bring it back to the present tense moment, I think the concern here is, you know, for sure the victims, the people who are being raped, the children who are being exploited, things of that nature, but just on like a very base level, good sexual health. Like, is this contributing to that, or is it compromising it? And I would argue that it's those of us who are criticizing the porn industry that care more about having good sexual health than the people who are actually inherit that, you know, narrative about them.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what you'll hear from these so-called, you know, empowered sex workers. I don't like to use the term sex worker. I'm using their term. And I hate that we've normalized that term, sex worker, because I think it totally obscures the reality of what's going on in the sex trade. But these women who will come out online or in the media, in documentaries, on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, wherever, and say, you know, this industry is great, I'm having a great time. Oh no, we signed these contracts, and actually the porn industry, there's way less STIs in the porn industry than anywhere else because we're so careful. And actually, you know, like, every single thing that I'm doing in this film, I've consented to, and if I haven't, you know, I won't do it. But we all know that that's not true. You know, through the work that you've done in your documentaries, that that's not true. We know when we listen to women who have left the porn industry and they tell us what happened to them in the porn industry while crying, and these are some of the biggest stars in the porn industry who, you know, women in porn don't last very long because it's such a hard, you know, abusive, emotionally abusive, never mind, like, physically abusive place to be. People don't last long. And when they come out, they tell the truth, and then they're attacked by the industry, and they're attacked by their, you know, coworkers, and they're attacked
and
by
silenced.
These. Yeah. And silenced. and called crazy, called drug addicts, you know, whatever, just attacked in the most brutal ways. I've seen it happen with these YouTubers, these male YouTubers who are porn fanatics and are constantly, you know, having porn stars on their little YouTube shows, and they're making, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars off of this YouTube Twitch grift. And constantly selling the industry to the boys who are watching. You know, these are guys whose fan base is like adolescent males, telling them that, you know, the porn industry is all fine and good. And it's actually just all a big joke. And these girls are all just having a fun time and they just really love sex. And then you hear the truth after the women leave. Yeah, it's the cognitive dissonance is amazing because you, like, it makes sense that while you're in the industry, you wouldn't speak the truth about it. You know, you're not going to get a lot of jobs in the porn industry. You're not going to get a lot of clients as a so-called sex workers. You're not going to get a lot of men watching your videos paying you money if you're telling them how much you hate it and that you're being abused and that you're miserable.
Totally.
And you're telling them, oh, I got into this because I was molested as a kid. And I started doing this as a teenager because my boyfriend pressured me into it. And I hate myself and I have to take prescription pills or drugs or whatever to cope with all of this. I hate sex. You know, like, I've talked to escorts, high-end escorts. You know, often that's the response you'll get when you start criticizing these practices and these industries. And it's like, oh, but like all these women who are making tons of money, like they're fine. And I'm like, no, they're not fine. You know, when I've talked to escorts who are still in the industry, but can't tell anybody the truth. So they're telling me and I can't tell anybody either. You know, I mean, I'm not outing people, right? Like, I don't have sex. I hate sex. I can't have a relationship. I hate men because of what's happened to them in these industries. That's what the truth is. But you know, people believe what they want to believe. So they listen to these, they point to the, you know, the porn star, the empowered sex worker who's working for MindGeek or Pornhub or whatever, and is saying that it's all fine and good and it's all clean and above board.
It's strange in that sense of just psychologically speaking, even it's like this attempt to like find at least one example of the exception to create a rationalization for the whole and to project it over the whole. And I think like what these like conversations that we've been having about the subject, the value of these conversations over the last number of years is really helping to try and highlight how common the violation, the exploitation of people are in the porn industry. But from one thing that I've been starting to think about more recently, this past year and a half or so, and I wanted to ask you about this, if you've thought about this at all. In a way, pornography is technologized prostitution, somebody being paid to enter into a sex act, and then a person behind a screen accessing that sexual scenario to elicit arousal in their own physical body. But the relationship is to this two-dimensional screen. And I'm, you know, part of me wonders if this whole thing in a way is a dress rehearsal and a setup to create buy-in for a potentially much more compelling and immersive experience. This may sound crazy, but just looking at the innovation and advancement in humanoid robotic AI technology of like, okay, if we have become so bought in to this very objectified two-dimensional experience of sexuality with somebody behind a screen, what happens when we have, you know, people hear robotics and they think, like they have, you know, this old idea, but like where humanoid AI technology is going is basically to replicate human beings in the way they talk, in the way they move, in their physical bodies. And like, it's not like people aren't like, that's where it's going. And so I'm thinking, man, for a generation who's been raised to think of their two and trained and groomed to develop their sexuality in such this objectified, transactional way, like, what happens when that technology is available? What does that mean for human to human relationships and the population and like our conception of family? And like, I just think there's something more deeply intimate and mysterious and personal and powerful about our sexuality that finds its expression in the context of human to human relationships that is a part of the fabric of society. I see the potential for that fracturing on a global scale as technology continues to evolve. And I'm just curious if you have thought about that, looked into that at all, as just, yeah, part of like where our world is heading.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, that's a huge concern for me. I mean, I think that the humanness has been taken out of our relationships. Like, I think that we see that in various concepts, including on social media, including with things like dating apps, including, of course, pornography, where we're told that we can have relationships with people virtually. You know, we can connect with people virtually. That now, you know, the way that you date is by swiping through these one-dimensional faces. You know nothing about these people. You don't even really know what they look like because of filters and all that. But also, you know, as I wish that most of us knew, but it seems that many of us don't know or have forgotten, the way that you connect with people, the way that you're attracted to somebody, the reasons why you're attracted to somebody, that is about human to human, face to face contact. It's about body language. It's about all of these subtle things, smell, like hormones, chromosomes, things like that. The way that you're moving, you know, you can read so much about a person one-on-one or, you know, in actual person that you cannot online, that you cannot virtually. You can read people's emotions. You're getting subtle cues that you don't even know that you're getting because of the way that we've evolved as humans. And for women, that's really particularly important because we're vulnerable. We are more vulnerable than men are physically. That's just the reality. And we need that, you know, person-to-person, one-on-one sort of interaction to be able to tell if this person is safe or not safe. And that's where those gut instincts that I was talking about came in before, that we've all been taught to suppress, you know, that maybe if we feel like we're in danger or we feel uncomfortable with something, we're getting like weird vibes, then we're being judgmental and we're the bad one and we're being shameful and we should push that all down and be like accepting and inclusive and yada, yada, yada. You know, it's I think it's all sort of part of the same project. And I'm not saying it's a grand conspiracy, but it is what's happening to us. And the way that we have accepted not just pornography, but things like OnlyFans, as OnlyFans, even more so than pornography, has been totally accepted not only as harmless, but as actually a really positive thing for women because they don't even have to do anything and they're making so much money. But of course, you know, OnlyFans acts like a pimp. Most of those women are making no money. And they're selling their sexuality and their images to a whole bunch of strangers on the internet, which is dangerous both to your mental health and self and sense of self, but also just your safety. Like even that Ayala woman who is being, you know, passed around the internet as this sort of intellectual courtesan because she's collected data on her customers. But she's treated as this like intellectual, and she tells the world, all these heterodox guys, all these intellectual men who have really fallen for her shtick, that it's fine. And, you know, there's just some women who just, they're polyamorous and they like to have sex with lots of different people. And, you know, she's made boatloads of money off of OnlyFans. She's essentially selling OnlyFans to hundreds of thousands of young women who think, oh, if I do that, it'll be perfectly fine. And she says it's fun and she's rich. And, you know, like, it's a fun adventure to have sex with a bunch of different guys that you don't know. And she's sort of managed to move out of just the pornography space or sort of that YouTube bro-y space into this, like, you know, she's interviewed by Lex Friedman and Eric Weinstein. And she was just on Trigonometry. I'm not necessarily saying that all of those men have necessarily fallen for her shtick, but she's the new modern empowered sex worker because she can be held up as an intellectual, right? They pretend that she's some kind of sex researcher because she does these online polls again of her customer base. And she, I mean, I don't want to just go in on this one person, but to me it's very obvious when you don't even have to know these women just to hear about their life stories, to see how they behave, to listen to them talk about these interactions and about those relationships with men and about their lives and how they actually live, to see that they're totally cut off from their bodies, that they've separated mind and bodies, that almost all of them, if not all of them, have these really traumatic backgrounds where there's been abuse. And you've had to compartmentalize. That's what you do to cope with trauma. You compartmentalize, you separate body from mind so that you can cope, that you can just deal with and not be completely destroyed by this thing that's happening to you. And that's what I see in this woman, and that's what you see in so many of these women, of course. And I just am like, how are you not seeing this? And how have we become so comfortable with these, like, digitalized relationships and interactions? I mean, I don't want to engage with anybody online, really. Like, right. Of course you have to do it, and it's convenient for certain situations. You know, I do my podcast online. But those are, you know, my friends are people that I see in real life. My partner, the person that I'm intimate with, is somebody that I'm engaging with in real life. You know, I don't want to have these screen relationships or interactions, but we have generations growing up and thinking that that's not only normal, but that's what a relationship is. And that's how you date, and that's how you have sex, and that's how you have friends, and that's how you engage with the world.
And I think that's my larger concern, is the dehumanization aspect. And it's interesting, to your point, you know, a lot of these, like, thinking men, when it comes to this issue, so, like, other issues, they're so unwilling to accept just a passive idea, right? There's a lot of scrutiny. There's a lot of, like, digging in and unpacking kind of an idea to get to the bedrock of truth or whatever. With this issue, as soon as the narrative is presented, there's this, like, real tongue-in-cheek kind of passive acceptance of it. And I'm like, where's the critical thinking when it comes to this issue? Why are we so willing to dispense with our intellectual capacities and ability to be analytical and have critical analysis of something when it comes to this issue? And so I think that sex is something that is very primal. It triggers, like, deep, visceral, primal feelings and emotions and physiological sensations that sometimes we use to justify or rationalize or bypassing our conscience or cognitive capabilities. The problem is that we are floating down a stream of dehumanization. And I mean, if you look at, like, the most, I mean, it's going to raise massive problems as technology continues to advance, for families, for our population, for what it means to be human. And, like, so sadly we don't have time to unpack all of that today.
Transhumanism.
But, yeah, but, like,
that'd be another really long podcast. But I see what you mean, and I share your concerns for sure.
Maybe that's a conversation we can carry over to your podcast, because for my part, like, I would I feel like we need like an hour or two to just even pull apart, like, where's this going? Yeah. And I don't know that anybody can say for sure, but there are scenarios and thought exercises. Like, I've gone down paths and it's scary. I'm like, it seems like right now the argument is like, well, you're either for or against porn. That means you're either a prude or you're, you know, sex positive. And it's like, it's so much bigger than that, in my opinion, in terms of how we understand the fabric of humanity, what it means to be an authentic person, to be connected. We've lost in a lot of ways our grounding. You know, the idea of something spiritual is that you can kind of explore, right? Like this other like world, you can explore it, but you can't truly be a spiritual person unless you have some grounding in the real world. That's what allows you to explore like possibility and stuff. So I think we've pulled up our grounding, our mooring when it comes to sex, and we're just a boat being cast to and fro at sea. It's like you're just exploring these things without any sense of grounding to something as simple as like what makes us human. And that's scary to me. So I'm gonna give you the last word. Sadly, we start these conversations and we start getting momentum about an hour in right when we need to end them. But
let's definitely continue the conversation. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's so much to unpack in terms of what you've just brought up, and
yeah, but, to be continued.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm so glad that we're having these conversations, and I think that despite the fact that I feel really disturbed at where the porn industry is going, and where the sex industry has gone and is continuing to go, I do think that maybe there's I'm seeing these conversations happening in places where they weren't happening before. And I'm seeing people start to question these, at least on a personal level. And I think it's so important to talk about the industry and what's happening in the industry and how corrupt and horrific and exploitative and abusive and disgusting it really is. Because I think that people will understand what they're watching. But there's also these one-on-one conversations that we can have with all sorts of different people, and they really resonate. Like I was telling you about the women that I talked to, about this young woman that I was talking to, and telling her, you know, like, it's okay to say no. Of course it's okay to say no. What he's doing is actually wrong. It's bad for him. You're unhappy. It's clearly having a negative impact on your relationship. He's lying to himself if he thinks that it's not. And no one had ever told her that she could just say no. And she was like, thank you so much for saying that. And I was like, yeah, you can say no. And it's so disturbing that nobody's ever told you that before, and that you feel like you can't say anything about what's happening in your relationship with
and
your
partner.
And
that's so common.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
so common.
And again, that, you know, when I talk to men about it, they're like, thank you so much for saying that, because I feel grossed out by myself when I use pornography, and I can tell that it's having an impact on my sexuality, and I don't like it, but I'm just, you know, told that this is normal and this is what you do, especially if you're single, because you have to and you need an outlet. So, yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see that those conversations are resonating, and that people are questioning porn from a variety of different angles. We don't have to do it in one way. We can do it in all sorts of ways.
Yeah. Thanks so much for, yeah, just your willingness to come. And you're in Mexico now, so we appreciate you coming and spending time with us. And you are somebody who has thought deeply into these issues and worked in this space for a long time. And so I hope that others will check out your podcast. And where is the best place to connect with you these days?
I think probably Substack. So that's at www.meganmurphy.ca. And my podcasts, both Feminist Current and The Same Drugs, are both there. And my writing. And then, of course, people can follow me on Instagram at Megan Emily Murphy, and on Twitter. I'm back on Twitter. It's been a year now that I've been back. And woo. I've been very prolific.
Awesome.
That's Megan E. Murphy. So those are probably the best places. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we always appreciate your insights into this subject matter that we share so much passion about. And so thank you so much again for coming. And we'll have to save the transhumanism conversation for next time. But I'm looking forward to picking that up. So
yeah, me too. Thank you so much for having me and for bringing me over here, because I always love talking with you. And this has been great. Thank you.
You can check out all our podcast episodes, articles, and films at exoduscry.com. And join the daily conversation by following Exodus Cry on all major social platforms.